This is take number six, the morning of January the 8th, 1961.
Well, the thing you were explaining was that the country was at a point where it had lost patience with the backward policies of the Republicans and was ready for the change that came with Woodrow Wilson.
That's right.
But the change was one of great historic significance that altered a great deal of the governmental structure of the United States from there on.
That's true.
Because new departments, new institutions, new checks and balances were being set in to exercise some control over the economy.
That's right.
Is that right, sir, to say new checks and balances are new means of accentuating checks
and
balances?
Well, these boards and bureaus that are set up for certain specific purposes are agents of the legislative branch of the government. And while the president is authorized to appoint the members of those boards, they are responsible directly to the Congress because they're set up for the simple reason that the Congress doesn't have the time or the means to carry on the programs which they are authorized to do by the legislation which creates them.
In other words, they are instruments to carry out the checks and balances of
That's
government.
That's correct. That's correct.
Well, you appoint them, but you can't dismiss them. The Congress creates them so that, and the courts finally have to pass on some of their acts.
Well, that's right. But they are really legislative branches of the government.
Oh, they are that?
Yes, they're part of the legislative branch of the government.
Some economists once described the agency set up as the act of the legislature in putting off doing what they ought to do but haven't got the time to do.
That's correct. That's the correct analysis of it.
They would be managing and in a sense be in a sort of an executive position where they would be overseeing like some of these standing committees would be doing.
They're always set up with certain powers and duties by the Congress. And of course, when the bill passes, authorizing them, the president has to sign the bill. And they always arrange the situation in the setting up of these organizations that the president makes the appointments. But they have to be approved by the Senate, another legislative action. And as branches of the legislative branch of the government, they have to listen to all the details that the Congress would never have time to do, and working through the great number of committees that the Congress does, the creation of these boards and bureaus for the assistance in the operation of the government of the United States is a good thing. It works all right when the proper personnel are put in charge of the various boards and bureaus.
Well, Mr. President, there's been claimed recently that although a president appoints with the consent of Congress the members of these commissions, he can't remove these individuals.
I think he could if he wanted to.
All right, sir.
I think he could if he wanted to. I don't think there's a single one of them that if he fell out of the president wouldn't resign if he was ever requested to do it.
Well, may I ask you this? Isn't it possible for the president in appointing men to these commissions to ask at the same time for an undated letter of resignation?
No, he shouldn't do that.
He shouldn't do that.
He shouldn't do that.
Your feeling is he shouldn't ever
do
that.
I shouldn't.
Why, sir?
Why, because how in the world can a man go ahead and be a public servant if he's sitting on a hot stove expecting any time for the lift to come off and throw him out? It's wrong. It's entirely wrong. And I want to say to you that I never had any difficulty with these boards and bureaus. It's the duty of the president to pick men for these boards and bureaus that will work in the public interest. That's what they're set up for. And there have been times since this program started back in 1888 when the president has appointed men to these boards that would not enforce the law as the Congress intended that it should be. And that's one of the difficulties that's been taking place in the present administration. They've padded these boards and bureaus so that they don't work in the public interest, but work in the interest of those people they're supposed to regulate. That's what the trouble is.
In other words, what you're saying, and this is a very important piece of business, is that all the bureaus you set up, all the protective devices you set up, to make sure that the people are fairly dealt with won't actually come off as they're intended to come off unless the occupant of the White House makes sure that they do.
That's the point, exactly, and that he makes sure that the appointees that he places on these boards are men who are working in the public interest as the Congress would set up the board, our bureau, intended that it should be. And you'll find that unless a man's ideas are for the welfare of the general public, on one of these boards and bureaus, they can do a tremendous amount of harm, and they're bipartisan. They usually are set up on a 5-4 basis or a 3-2 basis, and it's a program that is absolutely essential in order to carry on the government of the United States. And I don't think there were any boards or bureaus of the kind created while I was president, but the appointees to these boards made by me were men who I thought would work in the public interest.
But they're balanced to one party or another so as to enable an administration to have a preponderance of members on the board?
Yes. And it's a bipartisan proposition, and the appointees usually are good men from both parties, and they usually work in the public interest.
But they're usually appointed for a much longer term than a president's term.
Well, I don't know what their length of term is. It's different on every board.
Well, Federal Reserve, 16 years.
That's one example, but most of them are not for any such long term as that.
Well, Mr. President, here's a basic question. If a party has a majority vote and is in control of the executive as well as the legislative branch, why do you have to have the small majority Democrats and the rest the Republicans? Why not all Democrats?
You've got to have these boards set up so they'll have a viewpoint that's not partisan. And some of the minority members of these boards have done greater service to the greater service to the majority members than have the majority of experience.
In other words, as a strong party man and a believer in party, the opposite party, public may benefit.
That's my about it. That's my opinion. Always has been.
Wouldn't you, in most of the agencies in recent years, come to the conclusion that they were directly under the arm of the president and the executive?
No, I wouldn't. No,
why not, sir?
No, because the president has no more time than the Congress has to get the facts that are placed before these boards and bureaus. That's the reason they're set up, so that the people who are interested in the welfare of the organizations which they're controlling can have a proper appearance and have their ideas and their requests on record. The president wouldn't have time to do it. He couldn't save
his time. But he needs to make sure that these policies, these people preside over some of the basic policies that the president is directly involved with, and if they go counter to the president on federal power, for instance, on federal communications, on the tariff, all those things.
Well, if he appoints the wrong men to the places, that's what ought to happen to him. He ought to look at them very carefully and then appoint the ones
he inherits a great many of them.
Well, yes, and they usually go out, though, during his term, and he can change them.
Well, does the president have the single weapon at his disposal that if he finds a member or a group going against his policies, to denounce him publicly or to express no confidence in him?
That's the thing they're always afraid of, and that's the reason, one of the reasons that they usually try to do the right thing. You find that most of the boards and bureaus are set up on a basis of personnel that's the highest in the country. And of course, some of the best men in the country are not in favor of certain things that the president might be for. And in that case, all he has to do is just to say this is a wrong decision and it ought not to be implemented, and then it won't be.
Well, Mr. Mr. President, you also made the important point. Not only hasn't the legislature time and it should not intervene, but also the president shouldn't intervene in the conduct of the business so that everybody can get a fair chance. Because recently we had the example of Sherman Adams trying to dictate on the, what was it, the Dixon-Yates thing.
Well, that happens all the time, but then most of the boards and bureaus don't pay any attention to things of that kind. You see, the pressure on the president's assistants and in the members of the under cabinet members are importuned all the time to interfere in the decisions of these boards and bureaus. Mostly they don't have any influence, but when they do, it's always not to the benefit of the public.
Then you're strongly of the opinion that the powers of the president that are indirect or implicit are good enough to control these various bureaus if they go haywire.
Well, he shouldn't try to control them, but he should wait until there's vacancies and then see the people go on there to know what the public interest is.
Well, what's wrong
They've
with
got to work in the public interest. And, well, the sometimes
president
the president's not working in the public interest. He doesn't know it, but sometimes he isn't.
Well, at the same time, you're saying that where the president feels that some commission is working against the public interest, he always has that great power of public...
That's right, and whenever he makes a statement like that in regard to any one man on these commissions, it puts him in a position where he can't do any good by staying on there. He usually resigns.
But what you've also said, a rather... shocking thing there, that they sometimes the president doesn't work in the public interest or doesn't realize that he's not working in the public interest, and that he needs some bureau like that to tell him, say no to him?
No, the bureau is not supposed to say no to him, but the bureau ought to come to a conclusion on the facts with which the president may not be familiar, and then make a decision. And if the president is sufficiently interested, he look into it, and usually he finds that most of the time these boards and bureaus make decisions in the public interest. But the president can't know every little detail that goes on in the operation of the great business layout in this country, and that's what these regulations are for. They're regulations of business. And the idea, of course, is to see that big business doesn't obtain control of the government.
But it's strange that you would insist that a president elected on a certain policy and a certain platform can still not have with him some of those agencies that will help him carry out the platform and directly under his control.
Well, whenever he makes up his mind he wants to carry out the platform, he doesn't have any trouble doing it, because that platform has to be carried out through the Congress. And these boards and bureaus are incidental to that. And, of course, if they get too contrary with what's going on and the Congress is with the president, that situation can be remedied by hearings before congressional committees. I've held those hearings myself, and I know.
But a great many of those bureaus have been cocking an ear to a good many congressmen, and a lot of the corruption that's been discovered was discovered where congressmen were working with members of those bureaus for certain advantages.
Then that situation can easily be corrected by the President and the Congress. I'm not worried about it, because the objective in the long run is for the efficiency and welfare of the operation of the government.
And you want it decentralized.
That's right.
All right.
This is the end of tape number 6, the morning of January the 8th, 1961.
You see.
This is tape number 7, the morning of January 8th, 1961.
You were giving an example of a possible stacking of one of the agencies.
Well, we were discussing the boards and bureaus that have been set up as an assistance to the legislative branch of the government and also to the president, who makes the appointments on these boards. But suppose that policy is pursued to stack one of these boards against the program which the legislation which created it intends that it should carry out. For instance, suppose the National Labor Relations Board was stacked against the program, which was set up for the welfare and benefit, and to see that labor got a fair shake with the people who were always in a fight with them. Then you have a situation that was not meeting the intention of the legislation which created the board. And that can be true of the Interstate Commerce Commission. That can be true also of the Federal Trade Commission. It can be true of any of the other boards and bureaus that are set up. If they're padded with people who are against the program, then trouble is bound to come about. And I think to some extent that program has been purposely pursued in the administration, which is just now going out of office.
Excuse me, in order to get the record straight here, you just started this by saying we were discussing the padding. That was just before we were discussing that without making any tape, so that it won't appear as if there's a tape missing. In other words, we were talking before we put on the tape.
That's
about
right.
That.
We were discussing the matter before the tape was put on.
Yes.
On the fact that these boards and bureaus can be packed with people who are against what the boards are set up for. And that's the difficulty.
But when a president is on top of his job and doesn't stray away or get drawn away from active daily participation with the administration or the government, no agency, no bureau, not even the Congress itself can be unaware of the continuing policies of an administration or can stray from it.
No, that's true. Well, you see, to get back to the fundamental basis of the board setups, they're always set up to meet a condition which is developed that may require legislation and which the Congress has not time to get all the details necessary to create a situation that would meet the things that come up sometimes when too much power gets into the hands of a few people. That's what all these boards were set up to meet. And if the people placed on those boards are of complete understanding that the welfare of the public is what they're put there for, you don't have any trouble with them, President or Congress or anybody else.
Well, then, in order that these boards and commissions set up in their regulations and in their investigations do not arrogate to themselves greater power than Congress or the President, they can always be called to order by the President or by Congress by further legislation. Can't
That's
they?
Correct. Yes, always, courts. Always. And sometimes by the courts.
Right.
And you find that the vast majority of them have done good jobs. There have only been a few that have been padded and have not done the job as it was intended to be set out when the authorization legislation was passed to the Congress.
This one question, Mr. President. Then you don't regard these commissions and these regulatory agencies as a fourth branch of the government added on to the executive, legislative, and judicial?
No, I don't. It's a branch of the government that has been created by the necessity of the Congress and the President having more work than they can do by holding hearings on these various things. And the Congress sets these boards up for the purpose of their getting all the facts, and then, if legislation is necessary, presenting those facts to the Congress, and then the President has to pass on that when he signs the bill, if he decides to do it. So it doesn't take anything away from the President or the Congress, either one. It makes the operation of the government more efficient, that's all, in my opinion.
And their necessity was proved out. The necessity for setting up these permanent agencies within the government is proved out by the fact that the laissez-faire theory didn't work out, that business couldn't regulate itself and labor couldn't regulate itself, the banks couldn't regulate themselves. They had to be regulated. Somebody had to umpire them.
The welfare of the public was the first interest in the cause of the setup of these boards and bureaus, and they were set up for the very reason that labor and management and all the rest of the things which they control made no effort to regulate themselves in the public interest. They're set up for the purpose of regulating these organizations in the public interest. And when they cease to do that, they're of no use to the government, to the Congress, or the President either.
So they are with us to state, do you see that these are broadening out into greater areas than they were originally contemplated when they were set up?
No, no, the Congress can always stop that. Congress can always stop that. When they go outside their legislation authorizing their existence or the amendments that have been made to it, then you find that the Congress will take a hand and put a stop to it, sometimes on the recommendation of the President when he sees that they're going haywire.
Well, these agencies keep on proving over and over again that whatever our system requires to patch up or to buttress a situation or to shore up one of the areas in which we seem to be having trouble, we can do without the slightest involvement either with the Constitution or with any of three branches of the government.
That's true. The courts always have the final say on any judicial conclusions that any of these boards come to. They always can go to court on these things.
When do these agencies come into being? Well, under whose administration did they first get
introduced? Interstate Commerce Commission, I think in 1888. Right after Cleveland's first administration, and was approved in the Harrison administration. I think it was 1888, if I'm not mistaken. That's the first one, the Interstate Commerce Commission on Transportation, when the railroads were choking the country to death, and something had to be done to keep them doing that.
And a lot of, but they're not in connection with any Wall Street manipulations. They were just exacting high rates.
It had something to do with Wall Street administration for the simple reason that there were great many combinations that were being made in such a manner that it would choke the country to death. You remember the Northern Pacific proposition that came up in that period, and it was a situation where the great means of transportation, most of which had been subsidized by the government funds, were then using that situation to choke the public to death who had gone out and taken advantage of the opening up of these territories. And that's what's happened in most of these instances where these special boards have been set up.
Well, may I ask this question? These regulatory commissions were set up, but why was it considered essential to set up a post in the cabinet for health and welfare and that sort of thing? Couldn't that have been handled by an agency?
I thought so, but I didn't have anything to it. The Congress passed the bill, it went into effect.
Could you explain that, Mr. President?
You proposed one, didn't you? Didn't you?
Yes, I proposed one, but it didn't handle it in any way like I thought it ought to be handled, and I'd have to examine the record and see what the difficulties were before I can comment on it intelligently.
But
it was a terrible thing when it was finally done.
But health, welfare, and education, that accommodated Mrs. Holly, didn't it? She was the first member of...
I think that was the objective.
Well, that's one Holly you didn't care for. Mr. President, do you visualize these... agencies multiplying in the future to accommodate an ever more complex, highly socialized or highly welfareized administration?
No, I don't.
It might become.
I think there's more chance of there being consolidated and some of them being eliminated than there is of making new ones.
Well, surely.
At least that's what ought to be done.
Surely, as in the case of railroads now, they're rapidly diminishing and they're part of transportation.
Well, no, but you're going to have of transportation supervision,
right,
of airplanes and automobiles and everything else. So I don't think the Interstate Commerce Commission will ever be abolished.
Or at least maybe consolidated with the others.
Well, there may be some others that are consolidated with the Interstate Commerce Commission.
That's
now,
right.
When they were setting up the civil aeronautics, I wrote the bill for the civil aeronautics. I wanted to make it a part of the Interstate Commerce Commission. And the air people had such a fit, we couldn't get it done. But that's transportation. It ought to all be under one board with separate branches, maybe, for air, automobile, and rail transportation. But I don't know how you're going to get those things done, because it means and the elimination of some very good jobs, which are political in most instances.
Well, aren't we getting around to the point now where, since you've initiated orderly turnover of government, where with these agencies functioning without interruption, covering a great many activities, and with civil service, that the government has been more or less made like the permanent secretariat of some other countries, like in England, where there's not nearly the gap in transference that there used to be when we had a complete sweeping change of an incoming administration.
Well, I think that's to some extent set up for the purpose of meeting the overlap, and it's done it very well so far, I think.
We have, in a large measure, achieved a continuity in government that's more or less established technically.
Yes, that continuity is not hard to maintain when the outgoing chief executive is in a mind to cooperate with those who are taking over. One of the most orderly turnovers was made in 1953, and that was accomplished by calling in the members of the new cabinet and the budget director of the new administration and letting them sit with the people who were at that time working on the situation. In fact, Sherman Adams was allowed to come into the White House and figure out the staff arrangements that were necessary for his new boss. And that happened with every member of the cabinet of the new administration as I went out of office. And there was a very orderly turnover at that time.
Well, to prevent the wrong continuity, and to paraphrase Bill's point a little bit, supposing the incoming administration then had the right to reappoint totally new boards for each one of those boards in operation, not on an in-between or resignation upon appointment, but if it were arranged so that each new administration could appoint its own membership to those important organizations.
It shouldn't be done. The law prevents it. Every one of them is set up on a basis of continuity. And only when vacancies occur can the new chief executive fill those vacancies, and that's the way it ought to be.
In other words, that lifts it away from the political influence.
Spoil system, that's the thing. You don't want those things to be a spoil system proposition. They've got to be made up of men who are interested in a continuity of a program that's been carried on within the organization which they're supposed to regulate.
You don't think that more of a spoiled system can develop if they have tenure where they can't be disciplined by a president, excepting for obvious wrongs? There are a lot of petty wrongs that go on all the time.
Well, you know, there's been always a lot of conversation about civil service being one of the great handicaps of a new administration, and it is, and maybe it's a good thing. But I've heard it said that the only reason that Edgar Hoover wouldn't agree to civil service in his organization is because he was afraid to get some people in there that wouldn't quit when he wanted to.
This is the end of tape number 7, the morning of January the 8th, 1961.